Chapter 30. When he rented the small, corrugated steel building in West Dallas, Jen Stone was the only woman he had on his mind. Only Jen. Jen, and how she would help him pay his debt to her ex-husband. That smile spread across his face again as he thought of the photo of Jen he had sent to Chief Stone and the surprises he had in store for them both. If Jesse Stone only knew how close he had gotten to Jen, how on any number of occasions he could have taken her or simply snuffed the life out of her. Yet he had developed an odd sort of affection for her. It wasn't that unusual to know your targets in ways that even their lovers, priests, or parents never could or would want to. But he had never experienced feelings for any of his intended prey before this. He knew all sorts of things about Jen, things he had learned when studying her in L.A. before she met Hunsicker and moved to Dallas. He knew the makeup she wore, the spa she went to for waxing, the dermatologist she used for her Botox treatments, the motels she used for trysts with her Pilates instructor. He shook his head, thinking about Jen's foolish insecurities. He knew all about those, too. She didn't love the Pilates instructor. He was certain, in fact, she didn't even like him. But he was younger, much younger, and very good-looking. Good-looking in the way Jesse Stone was good-looking. Dark, athletic, a little sullen. He was fascinated by Jen's contradictions. She had been dating a wealthy TV producer at the time, not an unattractive man himself. Why, he wondered, would she risk everything for a man she could barely tolerate? She never looked pleased when she left Mr. Pilates, and she always left the motel first. He was struck by the expression on her face as she made her way back to her car. He had taken many pictures of that expression, had stared at it for hours, contemplating the feelings behind it, and still he could never work out its meaning. Was it boredom, guilt, or nausea? Was it all three? He found himself wondering about Jen quite often. He went to his duffel bag and fished out some of the photos he'd taken of her. He had hundreds of them. All sorts of photos featuring Jen in all states of dress and undress. But he wasn't looking for the ones of her nude sunbathing, or the ones of her and the TV producer making love poolside at his house in Benedict Canyon. No, he was looking for the motel shots, the ones where she had that jumbled expression on her face. But as he pulled out the stacks of neatly organized photos, there was a noise, a stirring from behind the temporary wall in the old factory building. He shoved the photos back into the duffel bag and went to see about the noise. When he stepped around the wall, he remembered the other reason this building was perfect. He had rented it mostly to ensure his privacy and anonymity. But now he had even greater motivation to be left alone. The rude blonde. Before going out to apply for those other jobs, and to further scout out the locations where Jen's pre-wedding parties were being held, he dosed his victim with more of his special drug cocktail. Nude and gagged, she was strapped down to an old workbench that had once been used for furniture building. He checked his watch and did the math. She'd be coming out of it soon. Not just yet, though. He stood over her, watching her. She was perspiring heavily, and he wiped her down with some shop rags he found in a forgotten storage room. The perspiration was one of the side effects of the drugs. He'd seen it many, many times before, and had to be alert to keep her hydrated if he wanted to keep her alive long enough to teach her about rudeness. But for now, he stood watching. Her eyeballs were moving furiously behind their lids, rolling, darting from side to side, muscles twitching, her arms and legs straining against the straps. She was having one of those vivid dreams. What, he wondered, was she dreaming about? No matter what the dreams were inside their heads, their bodies all reacted this way, men and women alike. Some shared their dreams with him in hope of establishing a human bond. As if. Some held stubbornly on to their dreams, foolishly thinking that it gave them dignity and a small victory over him. In the end, victory was always his. How many had died bargaining with him, offering up their false dignity as barter?
"I'll tell you now. I'll tell you my dreams."
He wondered if anyone who contemplated their final utterances predicted their last words would be, "I'll tell you my dreams." He sometimes toyed with the idea of injecting himself to see what those dreams were like. He never did. How much more vivid could a dream be than this? The rude blonde's body went slack, her eyes no longer moving beneath their lids, her arms and legs no longer straining against the leather straps. This was the calm before the storm. They went limp for a few minutes before coming out of it. He enjoyed this aspect of things. When their eyes would flutter open, and they began to drift away from the dream that had just seemed so real to them into the reality of their situation. When the horror would come rushing back to them all at once, and they would strain furiously against their straps. He went back into the other room and got a water bottle from the little fridge he'd bought at a second-hand store in West Dallas. But as he headed back to the rude blonde, his eyes drifted over to the duffel bag, and he thought of Jen. He put the water down and retrieved those photos of her. He stared at her face. It was surely a less beautiful face than it had once been, but it had character, like the faces of women in French paintings. He could hear the blonde coming out of it, hear her writhing on the workbench, straining fiercely against her bindings. He heard her muffled screams for help mutate into sobbing. Yet he did not move, pinned in place by Jen's expression, as the woman in the next room was by leather straps.